episode now, and so I'm very excited to share something with you. In my work with NCSY, I interacted with numerous very, very, very talented educators. And so before, I'm not actually going to share my screen yet. We can just all just, I guess, stare at me for a bit. I've got all of you on, and so I can see all your faces. I got a chance to interact with a lot of people, and tremendously resourceful and thought-provoking and talented individuals. And a friend of mine who's the director of education for NCSY named Rabbi David Beshefkin pointed out something, a historical happening that I wasn't aware of and I think is fascinating. Because we're actually going to start with a Torah source, and then we're going to talk about, I guess, our title for this evening, when Shabbos was almost on Wednesday. And so first, I'll just share our source sheet. Oh, no, that's not the right source. Yeah. That's not the right source sheet. Apologies. New source sheet. Okay. When Shabbos was almost on Monday, I think our official title was Shabbos almost on Wednesday, but Wednesday didn't fit in this line. But we're actually going to look at this source number two. God willing, all the sources are going to be in Hebrew. If you want in English, if you want the Hebrew, then I'm happy to share with you afterward. And this source comes from the Talmud, the primary work of the rabbis. It was published in the year 500. And this is really the collection of the oral Torah that we know today. The vast majority of any traditions that we have stem from this 40-volume document. We've got small versions over here. We've got big versions over there. They're all over the place. And this is something taught by Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai tells us something, I think, rather shocking. He says that if the Jewish people would only keep two Shabbatot, Shabbos, twice, properly, they would be immediately redeemed. And so, particularly these days when we're experiencing what we call galut, we're experiencing exile in such an extreme extent, it would be really nice to have a redemption. And apparently, all it takes is for the Jewish people to keep Shabbos twice. And so what we're going to try and understand tonight is really, what does that mean? What does it mean for the Jewish people to keep Shabbos? Why is that the key to redemption? And in order to understand that, I want to take you back about 100 years. Because the calendar, as we know today, is called the Gregorian calendar. And I don't know how familiar people are with the history of the calendars, but our calendars are weird. And most calendars are weird in some way, shape, or form. If traditionally this calendar was actually 10 months and then it became 12 months, anyone who's well-versed in Latin would appreciate that the fact that the last month of the year is called December is rather odd because the letters DEC represent 10. And so the fact that our 12th month of the year is only 10 is rather odd. November from 9 should not be the 11th month, it should be the 9th month. But when this calendar was in use during the times of Julius and Augustus, then they sort of jumped in and they wanted the best months, the happiest months, the months of the summer to be their months. And so they sort of shtup, that's a good Yiddish word for, shtup, they forced themselves in. And so the two nicest, warmest months became July and August from Julius and Augustus. And obviously those months had to have 31 days because, Julius couldn't have a month that's going to be less than some of the others. And so, December got pushed and November got pushed. And this whole calendar is a little bit interesting. But the calendar is set up to have 365 days a year. And it takes a while. For some people, it takes a long time for them to figure out, which month has 30, which one has 31, what years are going to be leap years. And all of it doesn't fit so well. And so there were actually numerous attempts and suggestions of changing up the calendar. And ultimately, in 1921, the entire world within the League of Nations was willing to accept that we'll follow the Gregorian calendar, the calendar that we know and use today, for this 12-month calendar with the various days, and the whole world was going to be on the same calendar. And yes, if you go to Israel, Israel will talk about, the Hebrew months, and so right now we're in the month of Iyar, but on checks and in official document, official business, everyone is on the same calendar. That's 1921. 1923, things change a little bit. Because it's not just one man, but we're going to put the credit, or the blame, if you will, on a man named George Eastman. Does anyone know who George Eastman was? Oh, I apologize. I think people are muted. I'm seeing a couple smiles, and so I will assume. Oh, Lynn?
Photographer?
Yes, George Usu was a photographer extraordinaire. He was the founder and CEO, head of Kodak. It's officially called the Kodak Eastman Company. And so George Eastman was a powerhouse businessman. George Eastman was amongst the richest and most powerful men in the United States in the early 1900s. My sister-in-law's from Rochester, New York, which today is like a nice, small, quaint town. But back in the day, it was really huge and robust because there was a ton of business from the Kodak Eastman Company based out of Rochester, New York. And so George Eastman approaches the League of Nations. United Nations only came after the war. And he says, this is not a good calendar. It's not working. And he'd already instituted in his own company, but he wanted to introduce a new calendar. And this new calendar was going to fit much better. Because on a simple level, and in business terms, our months are a disaster. I don't know if anyone keeps books. I certainly don't. But I know if any of you do, January, February, and March spans grand total of 89 days, whereas July, August, and September span a grand total of 92 days. Now, 92 versus 81 doesn't make a huge difference in my life, but when you're trying to calculate books, when trying to judge quarters in a business context, it doesn't work. It's too much of a difference. And so Eastman says, there's got to be a better way to do this. Instead, let's have four equal quarters of the year. We know that the sun travels around the Earth travels around the sun, The Earth travels around the sun for 365 days every year. And so if we take 364 and divide it by four, then we'll have four equal sets of 13 weeks. It'll be perfect. And then we can have four equal quarters. It'll work well for businesses. And on top of that, I was born on Friday the 13th, August, Friday the 13th, 1993. And so Jews are not so into superstitions of that sort, but some would say that's an unlucky day. For the vast majority of my life, being born on Friday the 13th doesn't matter because last year it was on Saturday, I think. I don't remember. This year, maybe it'll be on Sunday. But every year it moves a little bit. It's always changing because the way our calendar is set up, the day of the week and the day of the month don't correspond. They're always in flux. But Eastman says that doesn't work so well because then you have situations where like Thanksgiving is going to be early or late, which is like a funny thing that you got a holiday moving around. And actually, I believe this year, Rabbi Myers, one of my colleagues, is like very knowledgeable about these things. This year, based on the way the calendar fell out, there was the most number of days possible between Thanksgiving and the 25th of December, I guess because of whatever worked out. And so there were more sales because for some reason, once Thanksgiving comes, people start buying things. And so a rabbi of mine pointed out that there are really only two holy days, not holidays, but holy days in the American calendar. July 4th, because it's Independence Day, and the 25th of December for its own reason. All of our other holidays, Memorial Day that's coming up, or Labor Day, or President's Day, they're all holidays that are on a Monday or a Thursday that are all functions of the month and not necessarily functions of the calendar itself. And so Eastman says, we got to have a perennial calendar. We got to have a situation where the first is always going to be on Sunday. Sunday the 7th will always be on a Saturday, and so on and so forth. And so my birthday would always be on August 13th. I would always be on Friday, August 13th, and not any other day of the week. So he makes this suggestion. Now, I think I actually gave it away a little bit, but there's a serious flaw in this argument, and particularly for committed religious people, Jews in particular, this Eastman proposal, the international change of the calendar, would have massive, massive ramifications. Now, any thoughts why this would make a difference for committed Jews? Toby? All right. I'm getting a couple. Anything? Okay. All right. Maybe we'll remute and I'm happy to fill it in.
Nobody has any thoughts on that, really?
Why would it matter? If we have four sets of 13 weeks. What's going to happen? Okay. I apologize if someone's trying to share. I just can't hear them. But effectively what would happen is that, you know, if you're good at math, four sets of 13 weeks is going to come out to a grand total of 364 days a year. And so within this proposal, they say, Eastman, what are you going to do with that last day? It takes the sun, the Earth 365 days to go around the sun, not 364. What about that last day? Ooh. What about that last day? I'm unmuted. I'm good. Okay. And so Eastman says, oh, not a problem. We're going to have what we're going to call a blank day. A day that's not you know, part of the calculation. It's just not going to count. And so I guess businesses won't be open. No one's going to do anything. Maybe we'll just say everyone stay home that day. No one go out. If you could imagine such a crazy phenomenon. And so if you make that suggestion, the Jews have a problem. Because if we said that, you know, okay, Sunday is going to be the first of the month, and then Monday will be the second, the third, and the fourth, the fifth, the sixth, the seventh will be Saturday, and that'll work great for 28 days of the month, and then the next month will start, and the first of the month will again be on Sunday. Shabbat will always be 7, 14, 21, and 28. But after December 28th, we're going to have an issue. Because after December 28th, as far as I'm concerned, it's going to be Sunday. It's going to be what we call Yom Rishon, the first day after Shabbat. And yet, according to the calendar, it's not going to be. According to the world, economically, in terms of business, and in terms of general society, they're going to say today doesn't count. Today is a non-day. And then the next day, what I call the second day of the month, everyone's going to be calling Sunday. Now, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that if you just wait another 6 days, then what I call Yom Shabbat, the rest of the world is going to call Friday. And so what are we going to do? All of a sudden, Shabbat is no longer going to be on the weekend. Shabbat is going to be some totally separate time. And maybe for the first time, we actually need to be very, very grateful to God, to the world even, that Shabbat is on Saturday. That at no point in time did it ever get messed up. As far as we're concerned, the world has been around for 5,780 years. Which means that for 5,780 years, someone has kept track of what day of the week it is. On Friday night, after we finish the silent benediction, the silent prayer, we all together say Vayechulu. Kulu, at least in synagogue. And you're supposed to deliberately say that with a group, to the extent that if someone has missed it, you know, they've got a longer personal prayer, they're really connected, and the rest of the congregation has already continued, then oftentimes you'll see people pair up and they'll read it together, read that Vayechulu paragraph. Why do we do that? Because our rabbis say that that's actually a testimony. You are testifying, and we always need a testimony with two people. People don't testify on their own in Judaism. You always need to have a buddy. And it's a testimony that the world was created tonight, 5,780 years ago. Shabbat is a testimony that the world was created in just 7 days. And today is the night of the fourth day of the week. And it's the same. It's Monday. I'm being told that it's Tuesday. Tomorrow's Tuesday. My apologies. So. Okay. Today was Tuesday, tomorrow is Wednesday. Tomorrow will be the fourth day of the week. Tonight is that fourth day of the week. I got corrected and then uncorrected. Apologies. And I think it's crazy to think about the fact that thousands of years ago, it was that same fourth day. The fourth day during creation, God created the sun and the moon. That's going to happen today. That happens today. It's all part of that same day. And every single Shabbos, we're not just testifying. Thank you, Julie. We're not just testifying that God created the world in 6 days, but that today is I couldn't tell you what number, but today is the anniversary of that. Every 7 days we have that cycle of God creating the world, and every seventh day we are resting. But that testimony, that wouldn't be possible if they kept moving the days. And so one of the fun things about about being on Zoom is that you have a chance to share things that you probably wouldn't ordinarily bring to a class discussion. So here we have the Congressional Record from 1965. This argument that was made and actually was brought up again in 1965, and you can see here there's a whole debate about the world calendar reform. It was another attempt to try and make it happen. And if you look in this bottom right, it talks about this idea of a blank day, that you're just going to have a day that's not going to fit into the rest of them. We're not going to look at all the details, but this was in the United States Congress, and I can show you even further, even further a document from the Daily News Bulletin. The Daily News Bulletin was a publication in, and this is from the year 1931. Let's share this one. This is talking about someone named Rabbi Hertz. Rabbi Dr. Hertz was the chief rabbi of England, and I don't know what chumashim, what Bibles you guys use in the synagogue, but growing up, the chumashim that we had were these black and white Pentateuch chumashim rather than the blue stone chumash. We used the Hertz chumash that he published, but one of the big things that one of his claims to fame, if you will, was that in this JTA bulletin, what they're sending out in 1931 was that Rabbi Hertz was in Geneva for the League of Nations to argue in front of the League of Nations saying that they should not change this calendar. We don't want calendar reform. It would be catastrophic to the world Jewish population. Rabbi Hertz garnered support from various other religious groups, and Baruch Hashem, it ended up not happening. And so while Julie's right that today kind of feels like we may as well not have a calendar anyway, because every day is sort of running together, the concept, the idea that we could have Shabbos happening during the week was actually something that was suggested and considered by our rabbis as well. And so now we're going to stop jumping back and forth between screens as much, and we're going to look at our source sheet. Because the very first source that we have is what I think a fascinating consideration in the Talmud, again, in the same general book, although a few pages earlier. The Talmud considers, based on a conversation between Rabbi Huna and Chiya Bar Rav, what happens if, God forbid, you're in a plane crash, I guess in their case a boat crash, you wake up in the desert, and you don't know what day it is. Your watch stopped working, and you've got no clue. So maybe you can try and figure out what day it is based on when you left, but you don't know how long you've been unconscious for. And so you wake up in the desert and you've got no clue. Is today Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday? I don't know. And so what are you supposed to do? They instruct, well, count 6 days and then keep 1 day, because we still want to keep Shabbos. We don't want Shabbos to go away and disappear. And so the guidance that our rabbis provide is that you should assume that Shabbos is going to be after 6 days, and you sort of have a full week and then you have Shabbat. But Chiya Bar Rav says, no, that's not the right move. You should instead assume that today, right now, is Shabbat, and later on, you'll count 6 days and have another Shabbat. Now, what's the basis of this argument? Like, why one over the other? Seemingly, none is going to be more likely. It's not like you're going to have an opportunity to say, well, it's more likely that Shabbat is today versus Shabbat is going to be at the end of the week. Today might be Wednesday, and you're totally off. And so, and ultimately, actually, on a halakhic, on a Jewish law level, we end up assuming that this is not the right way to approach it. But from a Jewish thought perspective, this is an interesting concept. And so, where are they getting from? What's motivating them? And so the Talmud explains that Rav Huna prioritized the experience of creation. When Adam was first created, Adam and Eve, they born, and shortly thereafter, Shabbat starts. Whereas Chiya Bar Rav is saying, no, it's got... Sorry, other way around. Chiya Bar Rav is saying it's consistent with that of mankind, whereas Rav Huna is telling us that it's consistent with creation, that it took God 6 days to develop and build the world, and then God rested on the seventh day. And so we have this idea that you might have Shabbos that doesn't fit in, and these sort of diametrically opposing ideas about how do we view Shabbos. Is Shabbat something that is experienced from God's perspective or from man's perspective? And with that, I think that can help us appreciate and understand what's going on in this idea of two Shabbatot, that if the Jewish people keep two Shabbatot, then they'll be redeemed. Because you got to wonder, why two? Like, what's wrong with one? If they do one, that's not good enough. Like, it's got to be a second one. Like, the first one's got to be so great that they want to come back. You have to make sure the cholent's really good and that you know, they're nice. The chazan chooses nice songs. But if the Jewish people are committed enough to keep Shabbat once, seemingly that should be sufficient. And so Rabbi Dessler, who's one of the foremost Jewish thinkers of the 19th century, explains this. And we've got a book called Strive for Truth. I think you guys can still see my camera. This is a book called Strive for Truth. And I'll tell you, I went to a wonderful Jewish high school, very similar to Ida Crown, called the Ray Kushner Yeshiva High School. And when I graduated, everyone got a book. And so a friend of mine got The Prime Ministers by Yehuda Avner, just to date myself about how young I am. And I was so excited. That's so cool that, you know, we're all going to get The Prime Ministers. And so he gets The Prime Ministers, and I get this book, Strive for Truth, which is not like the most exciting title to a 17-year-old boy. And I was so upset. And then I spent some time in Yeshiva in Israel. I learned about Rav Dessler, and I was like, wow, this guy's incredible. He's got such meaningful and thought-provoking ideas. I want to learn more about him. And I show up at home, looking at my bookshelf, and I see there are these books called Strive for Truth on my shelf. Strive for Truth was actually written by his student, but it's basically Rav Dessler. And so we're going to have a chance to learn a little bit of Rav Dessler, and he's going to help us appreciate what this double element of Shabbos is all about. So in our fourth source, in Strive for Truth, he tells us that, and he's got a little numbers whenever he's quoting from a verse in the Torah or from a Gemara, but these are ideas that I think we're familiar with. Torah tells us that we're supposed to work for 6 days, and then on the seventh day we're supposed to rest, seemingly consistent with the experience of God, that God worked for 6 days and rests. And our rabbis tell us that if Israel were to keep these two Shabbatot according to their laws, they would be immediately redeemed. So he says, what does two Sabbaths mean? It means two levels of Shabbat. That there's this higher level of Shabbat and a lower level of Shabbat. In other words, the inner Shabbat and the outer Shabbat. This duality that exists in Shabbos is external and internal. And if they were to keep that, they would be immediately redeemed. And he says, since if one has attained Shabbat both outwardly and inwardly, that is perfection, and that too is redemption. What do we mean when we say outward Shabbat? If a person is not yet cleansed of his material desires, and Shabbat comes to him as a holy gift from on high, that is called the outward Shabbat. Now this is a nice, lofty, somewhat poetic description, but if I may, I'd like to sort of reframe what outward Shabbat means. Outward Shabbat is when Shabbat comes and you are not ready. I don't know what everyone else experiences, but in our home, on a Friday afternoon, whether Shabbat starts at 4 o'clock or at 8 o'clock, somehow I am always in the shower about 7 minutes before Shabbat begins. And begins nodding. I'm sure he knows I'm sure their house is very calm and collected. But it's always very exciting here. And we're trying to get things organized. We're trying to set up the cholent and the hot plate and make sure all the lights are set accordingly. When we were in Washington Heights, when we first got married, our next door neighbor, Maria, knew that if I knocked on her door on a Friday night, it's because we did something bad. We messed up in some way. The fridge light was still on. This was bad. One time I left the oven on. But Maria, thank God, was very, very helpful. And so Shabbat is when you're just totally not ready. And it just kind of comes at you. But even though it comes at you, you know, if no one knows if I stay in the shower a couple minutes late. Particularly today. Particularly these days when I'm not, it's not even like I'm going out to the synagogue on a Friday night. Shabbat could start, you know, when the time says for candle lighting, or Shabbat could start like 20, 30, 40 minutes later. Who's going to know? Who's going to care? So that outward Shabbat, when Shabbat word comes in to me and I say, even though I would like to be more prepared, I didn't shave, or I wanted to do this, I wanted to do that, our light setup is not perfect the way that we wanted it to be, Shabbat has come and so we're going to keep it. That's the outward Shabbat. But there's also an inward Shabbat, which Rav Dessler explains that it's called inward when the person has Shabbat in his heart, even before it arrives. When you're ready, when you've got somebody who's had a chance to shower and shave, and they're wearing their nice Shabbos clothing, or maybe their nice Shabbos sweatpants these days, and the person is saying, I'm going to make sure that I am ready for Shabbat to come. Then, if you're ready for Shabbat to come, whether it's on a Friday afternoon or even on a Wednesday, if you're planning and thinking ahead of, I want to make sure that Shabbat's going to be good. And so for some people, it means that they want to make sure to have a prepared Dvar Torah, a Jewish thought to share at a Shabbat meal. Maybe it's they want to make sure they have food. More than once on a Friday morning when I'm like, okay, I'm going to put up the chillin, I'm going to prepare the food, I realize, oh my gosh, I don't have the food I need in order to eat on Shabbat. So someone on Wednesday could think ahead and say, I want to be ready for Shabbat, I want to greet Shabbat, and so go to the supermarket on Wednesday and you'll be ready. That person, says Rav Dessler, then he can contribute something of his own holiness to Shabbat. When and you can make Shabbat holy. It's not just that it's this holy day that exists that forces me to stop, but that I can make something special of Shabbat. And he speaks a little bit further, but we're going to leave Rav Dessler at that. These two levels, the outward and the inward, the stopping, whether we want to or not, or the actively putting an effort to make it happen. And this is explained similarly, although I think a little bit more elaborately, by a Hasidic Rebbe named the Beit Yaakov. The Beit Yaakov is from Ishbitz. His biography is a little bit too elaborate for the moment. But the Beit Yaakov passed away toward the end of the 19th century, and he shares an idea about Shabbat as well. And this is based on mystical sources. In general, in Hasidut, they're quoting the Zohar or another mystical kind of source, and so we'll all have a chance to feel like mystics for just a few minutes. And the Beit Yaakov says that you shall keep my Sabbaths at Shabtotai Tishmoru. And he's very particular. He says, wait, why is there Sabbaths? I thought there's only one Shabbat. Maybe if Eastman had one, we'd have more than one Shabbat. But in our lives, Shabbat is only on Saturday and no other time. So what does it mean to have Shabbats multiple in the multiple? The plurality of the Sabbaths is explained by the Zohar that there is an upper Shabbat and a lower Shabbat. All the inactive mitzvot. I don't like the term negative mitzvah. Oftentimes people will say there's a positive mitzvah and a negative mitzvah. Positive, and we call it a mitzvah aseh, something that you're actively supposed to do. You've got a mitzvah aseh to light Shabbat candles, to blow shofar, to shake a lulav. And you've got a mitzvah lo taseh, what would people unfortunately call a negative commandment. You know, don't eat pork, you know, don't gossip. You know, and I like to think that all mitzvot, everything that we're doing in our Jewish life is positive. And so every mitzvah is a positive mitzvah. There are no negative mitzvot per se, because it's all leading us toward a greater end, to a higher level of connection to God, to our community, and to ourselves. And so there are active mitzvot, you should actively do this, and there are inactive or maybe prohibitive mitzvot. Either don't do that or stay away from that. So on Shabbat, we have a lot of prohibitive mitzvot. On Shabbat, we'll try to be careful not to light a fire. I'm sure many of you have a difficult time not plowing on Shabbat. Then there's the whole issue of winnowing, and in order to do that, you have to figure out what winnowing is. But once you figure it out, I'm sure that could be very challenging for us as well. And so there are all these aspects of these laws that exist on Shabbat that we don't do, that we stay away from, that we're inactive, if you will. And the Beit Yaakov explains that all the inactive mitzvot of Shabbat are part of the lower Shabbat. You know, the Shabbat that exists in this realm, that if I want to try and connect to something greater, I got to stay away from these things. But the upper Shabbat, that second level, is compromised of the active mitzvot of Shabbat. On Shabbat, our actions are entirely focused heavenward, without the distraction of other things. Because you could, you know, jump out of the shower at the last moment. You could not do anything on Shabbat. You could do your best to keep the laws and the practices of Shabbat. And, you know, today it's very common to like go on retreats where everyone turns everything off. My uncle, who is amongst the most spiritually connected people I know, who happens to not conventionally keep Shabbat, he a number of years ago, he started going on these retreats. And basically the retreat, you know, I think he started on like a 1 day, now he's in like a 2 week zone, but he would start out and for 1 day, he would go to the retreat and he would turn off his phone and nobody could get to him. No one could talk to him. And he would meditate, and he would do a little bit of yoga. He's a yoga teacher. And I said to him, like, Uncle Paul, like, with all due respect, like, you have Shabbat. Like, what do you need to go on a silent retreat for and to turn your phone off? Shabbat, we turn our phones off every week. And so he answered what he answered. But this idea that's very popular now of wanting, you know, to have turn your phone off. And now my phone will yell at me if I've been on it too long. And that's something that sort of existed for a long time. But explains the Beit Yaakov, why does that exist? Why do we have this element within Shabbat? Because we want to avoid the distractions. We want to get engaged with Shabbat. And so there are two levels. Because when the Jewish people rest on Shabbat and don't perform creative activities, we call that the lower Shabbat. Because all you're doing is saying, I'm not going to. But you're not actively doing anything. You're not engaging. But you could. There's a second element of Shabbat when you actively engage in Shabbat. When you say, I'm going to spend time with my family now because I can. There are a lot of different ways that Shabbat can look. And a number of my rabbinic colleagues have been actually talking about what should your Shabbat look like. Now, until now, Shabbat has been very different for a lot of people, at least in the Skokie West Rogers Park community. You know, people are traveling here and there. They might be, you know, walking from here to there, but they're going to this synagogue and then that one. There's a Kiddush and there's a Shalom Zachar. There's all these things. There's a Shabbos meal. And so people aren't really always home that much on Shabbat. And so when you're home all day on Shabbat, what do you do? Like, do you just spend the whole time reading to yourself? Do you spend time with your family? What is that supposed to look like? And so that's the active part of Shabbat, that you don't just sit back and relax, but you actually actively try and engage in holiness, in connection with yourself, connection with HaKadosh Baruch, with God, and with your family. And when I think about these ideas, I'm reminded of something that happened a few years ago, as you can see on the bottom. It's very, very hard for us to be inactive. Human beings just like doing things. And so this is seen very clearly in South Korea. I actually tried finding out today what happened after this. But basically, South Korea had an issue that people were working way too much. You'll see the number here bolded, that they were working about 1,000 hours more than people in other countries. South Koreans just could not get enough of work. And so the idea was that they wanted to shut off computers at 8 p.m. on Friday night so that people would just not work for a little bit of time because they just couldn't keep going nonstop forever. And so it's ironic and beautiful that they chose, you know, 8 p.m. on Fridays. They were going to give South Koreans the opportunity to keep Shabbat as well. But this idea that people are so eager to work that they don't even want to stop. They don't want to create a level of Shabbat in their lives. But you'll tell me that, okay, I'm not South Korean. I'm not such a hard worker. I don't mind being on vacation. If I could be on vacation for a long time, it wouldn't be so bad. But I'm not so sure that that's true. I saw this meme a long time ago. Oh, it feels like forever ago. It's actually not so long. That I thought was hilarious and beautiful. And maybe some of our people here can relate to the top part. But you know, when everyone was sent into their homes, and my friend pointed out that we're not stuck in our homes, we were sent into our homes. We could all leave whenever we want, but we're choosing to stay inside for the benefit of the larger population or for ourselves, out of care for ourselves and for our families. And so your grandparents were called to war. You're being called to sit on your couch. You could do it. And I think for a lot of people, the initial weeks, you know, I think we've been doing this for 6 weeks now. The initial weeks of being in a stay-at-home and being in a quarantine were not so bad. You know, people were calling it a coronacation. Not going to work is not the worst thing in the world. Or working from home, I can work in my sweatpants. I don't have to put on fancy shoes. But I think at this point, what we're starting to see is that people are getting antsy. They actually want to go do something. They're eager to accomplish. And one of the things that embodies human beings is that they want to go out and do. I have a friend who manages a hotel. And so the hotels are now servicing COVID emergency specialists. And they don't really have a lot of employees still. And he furloughed the vast majority of his employees. And one of his bellmen called him up and said, Joseph, I'm getting unemployment. I don't need to be working right now. I'm not asking you for a job. But can you please give me something to do? I'm so bored. And thank God, my job keeps me busy, even from the privacy and comfort of my own home and my very comfortable office chair. But a lot of people who aren't working right now are having that challenge that, you know, there's the element of I'm not working and there's the concern there, and God willing, the unemployment offices are taking care of us to the best of their ability. But at a certain point, you just want to do. You feel like you need to be doing something. And on Shabbat, and we feel like we're being held back, that I can't do. I want to do, but I can't. And that is, I think, is something that so important for Shabbat always, but I particularly for right now. I'm not going to read this part inside, because this is a paraphrase anyway. But Rabbi Yehuda Lowy, who we call the Maharal, lived in the 15th century, and he was one of the greatest Jewish thinkers of all time. He wrote tremendous works, and they are so powerful and so deep, and one of my favorite things to explore. Anytime I want to, I really mean enjoy learning, I turn to the Maharal. It's so beautiful. The Maharal says that Shabbat is on the seventh day, and it's not a coincidence that Shabbat is on the seventh day. It's not that God was like, all right, well, let's figure out creation. I need one day for this and one day for this. Okay, it'll take a grand total of 7 days. Okay, I'll rest on the seventh day because it'll take me 6 days to put together all the projects that I'm working on. No, the Maharal says it's very specific, very deliberate. Because he says in creation, as we see, we've got a little box over here. In creation, the world exists in six dimensions, or six directions. There's north, south, east, and west, up and down, if you can imagine the box. And yet, that's only six, and the vast majority of this world exists not really in six dimensions, but in seven dimensions. The seventh dimension is not going in a direction per se. It's not external. It's not physical. That seventh dimension is something greater than that, something more. The seventh dimension, says the Maharal, is the box itself, existence itself, the world itself. We've got our six directions on the box, and then we've got the box. And in our lives, if we think about just myself, we're not going to talk about height, and definitely not going to talk about weight right now, but I am however many feet and inches tall, wide, and deep, and I take up this much space in the world. But if you were to ask Rabbi Began yesterday, who's Rabbi Zucker? Who's this Ari Zucker who's joining us? If he were to give you my dimensions, that wouldn't tell you really anything about me. It wouldn't be very, very helpful. What you would want to know is what's the essence of this person? Who is Ari Zucker? If you want to really know who Ari Zucker is, we'll have to spend some more time one-on-one, I think. But if you want to know who I am, then there's more to me than just my dimensions. And the Maharal explains that the world is more complex than just the dimensions. And so we say Shabbat Vayinafash. The word nefesh means soul. The soul of a person is really who they are. We're much more than our bodies. We are souls. And after our time in this world, we're going to go up to the heavens. We're going to exist in a soulful existence of pure spirituality, which is why it's worthwhile to get well attuned to spirituality while here. And so that rest that exists on Shabbat is that of being in a soulful experience. But really what it means is that you're not going anywhere. When you have a direction, if I can travel north, I can travel south, I can travel up, I can travel down. But I can't But on Shabbat, I'm traveling in. Shabbat, I'm not trying to go anywhere else. I'm not trying to accomplish. I'm not trying to do. I'm trying to be. And part of what Shabbat is about, and I think part of what being at home during this time is about, is being content and happy with just being. Not to worry about whether I'm active or inactive. And I think Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel says it so beautifully. You see a nice picture of him as a boy and as a not such a boy. He says, all week we may ponder and worry whether we are rich or poor, whether we succeed or fail in our occupations, whether we accomplish or fall short of reaching our goals. The Sabbath was given to us by God for joy, for delight, for rest, and should not be troubled by worry or grief. Rabbi Heschel is trying to explain to us, trying to teach us, that Shabbat is not about what you're going to do, what you're going to accomplish. That I might want to do so many things in my day, my week, in my life. On Shabbat, I'm very happy with being where I am, of taking stock of what I have. For so many people, they're at home and they're running to get out of home. So many people spent years of their lives maybe complaining, oh, I have so much work, I have so much this, so much that. I never have any time to myself. I never have any time with my family. I never have time to do X, Y, or Z. I'll show you. I've got a sticky note up here of things that I want to do while I'm in quarantine, things that I always said I should do and I just never got around to it. So this list has actually been hopefully not accomplished as of yet, but that's because I've been working. But we all have so many things we want to do in our lives, and this is the opportunity to say, I'm not going to try and explore, I'm not going to try and conquer, I'm going to try and be where I am. I'm going to be content living in my box because that's really who I am. And I'll just share one more thing. I don't know if you guys get the Colel's emails. Every week we send a video vort. A vort just means a word. It means it's a nice idea. A vort is usually a quick message. And I shared a video vort this past Shabbat, so I apologize if anyone's seen it. But I think it's such a beautiful idea. And even though it was written about 25 years ago, you imagine that Rav Shimshon Pinkus, who shared the idea, knew this was going to happen. He tells a story. He says that we have the high priest on Yom Kippur who served in the temple. And the high priest on Yom Kippur had a special room in the temple that was just for him. No one else could go in there. He only lived there for 7 days. And if you only live somewhere for 7 days, then you don't need to put a mezuzah up. When we go to hotels, even if it's for, you know, a long Disneyland vacation, we don't put up a mezuzah, only if you live there. If you're paying rent and you've really set roots for at least a month. And so if you were to look at the Kav Yochel, the hotel room that the Kohen Gadol was in, you would not imagine there'd be a mezuzah there, and yet there was. And I believe Rabbi Began was still with us when we learned this. Yes! All right. And we put a mezuzah on that door. Why are we putting the mezuzah on that door? It doesn't belong there. He doesn't live there. He's staying there for a week. And the Talmud in Yoma about Yom Kippur says something so shocking. It says, we don't want anyone to look and think that the Kohen Gadol is in jail. Because you don't put a mezuzah on a jail cell. Actually, today, you might. But fundamentally, a jail cell doesn't get a mezuzah. And so someone would say, is the Kohen Gadol in jail? Oh, no, he's not in jail. He's got a mezuzah on the door. Oh, wonderful. Why would anyone get the crazy idea that the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, one of the holiest people in our nation, would be in jail? Well, maybe it's because for that 1 week, he never, ever leaves the temple. He's sequestered. He's effectively in quarantine in the temple. And not just for that 1 week. Because actually, the Rambam Maimonides, in his laws of the Kohen Gadol, of the high priest, explains that he's allowed to have a home in Jerusalem, but he's never allowed to leave Jerusalem. The Kohen Gadol is never going to see the Swiss Alps. He's never, Rachman Litzan, he's never going to visit Chicago. He's not going to have EJ's pizza. Mother's Day is going to be spent far away from his mother because his mother can't hang out with him in the temple. He's stuck in Jerusalem. And so maybe some of us can imagine, to be stuck in one place is very challenging for a lot of people today. A lot of people who are not leaving their homes are going crazy. And the Kohen Gadol didn't have Zoom, and he didn't have YouTube, and he had no way of communicating with anyone. He was alone in the temple. So Rav Pinkus explains, how did the Kohen Gadol not go crazy? There's a fascinating Gemara, a fascinating story in the Talmud in Chagiga, talking about the first man, about Adam HaRishon. And it says, before he sinned, Adam HaRishon spanned the entire world. What does it mean that he spanned the entire world? Well, it's a debate amongst the rabbis. One of them says that spanning the entire world is from east to west. You know, you can imagine, he went from one end of the world to the other. He was so big that he could, I would imagine, wrap his arms around and touch them on the other side of the globe. He was huge. Or the other opinion says, no, he spanned the entire world, but spanning the entire world does not mean that he spanned around the globe. And obviously this is an allegory. We don't literally mean that, you know, first man was that big. But allegorically, he didn't span the entire world east to west going around the globe. Adam spanned the world from the ground all the way to the heavens. That he spanned the world going up. And Rav Pinkus explains that the Kohen Gadol was not concerned about traveling east and west. For many of us, we want to go. We want to travel. We want to get out. We want to see and we want to do. We want to accomplish. And even when we're at home, we're going to the Cincinnati Zoo and we're going on a tour of the Louvre and we're trying to see the world even from the confines of the four walls of our home. And so many of us are trying to travel and be like that first man, be like the first human being who spanned the world. We want to span the world. But there are certain times of life and of seemingly human history where the goal is not to span the world. The goal is from east and west. The goal is to span the world from the ground all the way to the heavens, to reach heavenward, to see how great of a human being can I be. Could I be someone so lofty that even though my roommate, whether the roommate's a spouse or a child or a dog or whomever, my roommate has asked me the same question 14 times today because they keep forgetting or because they're just so bored. They don't know what to do with themselves. If I can still respond with the level of patience and with a smile, if I can put in a little effort to make sure that other people are feeling safe and secure, if I'm putting in phone calls to people I don't always talk to just to make sure that they have an ear to listen to, can I reach for the heavens and become the biggest person possible during this time of quarantine? And that really is part of what Shabbat is all about. Because on Shabbat, this is not so well known, we have this concept of an Eruv that you're not supposed to carry outside of your homes. And unless you have an Eruv up, it's a whole complicated topic. But you also have something called an Eruv Tchumen, that there's also a limit to how far we travel outside the city on Shabbat. And today our cities are all close together, and so a lot of these laws don't apply. But this idea that when you're in a place on Shabbat, you don't go anywhere else. You don't travel beyond your borders. You stay where you are. Shabbat is a weekly quarantine to some extent. And we're really experiencing that these days, where we're not meeting together in a common place. We're by ourselves to a large extent, similar to that of the high priest. But it's an opportunity, both these days and particularly on Shabbat, where we can say, I've got nothing else going on. I'm going to tap into the upper level of Shabbat, the higher Shabbat. And I'm going to span the world. I'm going to span the world up, though. I'm not going to try and span the world going around. And so when we talk about this multiple levels of Shabbat, there's the forced. And we might not choose to be in the situation that we're in. But where do we see redemption? Where are the Jewish people really going to be saved? Explains our rabbis, explained Rabbi Dessler. It's when they actively engage in that Shabbat. And so, thank you so much for joining me this evening. I'm happy to field any questions and to schmooze, to hang out. As Rabbi Began said, I've got nothing else going on. So, I guess, let it rip.
Thank you, Rabbi Hari. It was really amazing and definitely a lot to think about. I think that you really hit on a point that I think is so relevant and something that a lot of people are kind of trying to navigate. Like a lot of our crowd, a lot of this group, a lot of people on this call and in general are trying to really connect to Shabbos, and now even more than ever. And I think one of the hard things, like for people maybe, is that if Shabbos is just about what we don't do, then it sort of leaves us a little bit like, okay, yes, I mean, yeah, we don't do this, yeah, it is a break, it's a technology break, and that's technology cleanse, but we got to think about creative ways to make it not just about what we don't do, but, creative ways to connect either to ourselves or to Hashem or to our family or whatever. So I think a lot of people are really trying to figure that out, and how to do that for themselves in a way that makes sense. So I know Dan Krennan's figured it out, so maybe you can tell you. Please have his headphones on so you can hear me. anyway, I don't know. So I'm sure a lot of people have thoughts and you want to share their feelings about that and what you spoke about, so we'll open it up for anybody who wants to jump in. Just unmute yourself. I got a theory.
Oh.
A theory. I'm not real confident in this. It'll be interesting to have the rabbi respond to this, whether or not this is connected in any way to being a Jew on Shabbos. There's a balance, because I think one of the things you're supposed to learn from the experience of Shabbos is there's a time for a journey and there's a time for a destination. And it teaches us that first we are limited in what we can do, because this is destination. This isn't the work part of getting there. This is actually being there. But by the same token, it has to be a series of experiences that are satisfying, that actually bring comfort and joy. And I think that's the more difficult part for me, capturing the opportunities
for something that's unique and doesn't break the rules, but makes me feel real good during Shabbos. That's a challenge that I think I have.
I couldn't agree more. I think that's what many, many people go through. And I can tell you for myself, one of the things that was always a source of connection for me was a lot of the Shabbat rituals that take place in the synagogue. The beautiful singing, the community coming together. Quite honestly, the food. I happen to love cholent, and I think, and I only eat it on Shabbat, and it makes me feel that Shabbat connection. And I commented to my wife, actually, that I don't think I'm so happy that I'm feeling at such a loss because of it, that because it's all external. All of those things, they're beautiful, they're spiritual connections. Truth be told, there's actually a lot that rabbis have to say about eating cholent on Shabbos. That in and of itself is a spiritual connection as well. But those are all things that exist outside of Ari Zucker. And the Pizetsna Rebbe, who was the rabbi in the Warsaw Ghetto, who was probably more attuned to this than most people in the world, in human history even, he teaches that ideally no one should ever say, I'm not able to engage because nothing happened to me to make me want to engage. I'm not inspired because I haven't had no inspirational experiences today, this week, this month, this year. And he says, that's not really the ideal. Ideally, you should be your own source of inspiration. And so, yes, exactly. Ideally, you should be your own source of inspiration. And so, how does that translate on Shabbat? And that's something that's very hard for me. I would go so as far to say, with all due respect to Rabbi Biegun, he probably feels like he could use a little bit of outside help as well. I think he actually commented how much he appreciated the chance to learn Torah in a collective group with us, we rabbis. Everyone needs something a little bit external. And yet, to some extent, our goal is to, and on Shabbat, when we're not traveling around, is to try and be our own source of inspiration, our own source of joy, of happiness. And the way that I sort of see that manifesting is, I think, in what the Maharal teaches about that idea of being at rest, of being who I am and not trying to do anything else. I'm not trying to accomplish. I'm a type A personality. I'm always trying to do things. And on Shabbat, I'm trying to do things. And sometimes the key is to not try and do things. Our friend, my mentor, Rabbi Reuven Brand, started meditating. I apologize. He started meditating over the summer. And I think there's probably no more Shabbat-like experience than meditation, which you can do anytime. But it's the experience of finding a joy and an inspiration that exists solely within yourself, blocking everything out. So that's a little bit more amorphous maybe than you would have liked. But I guess I would guide you to our dear Rabbi Biegun for more one-on-one guidance and thought. But I definitely think that you are right, that part of that message of Shabbat is the difference between wanting to journey and wanting to being comfortable being where you are. If I may, if people have the opportunity and the means, I'd like to suggest a source for this message, maybe a rather surprising one, Toy Story 4. My wife and I watched it recently, and Toy Story 4, which was sort of part of my upbringing, the main character goes through a journey where his life isn't going the way it used to, where he's expecting it to, where he wants to feel like he's accomplishing, and it's not working that the same way. And I'm not going to give you all the details, but I think the message of the movie, why I recommend it, just because it's so, because I think they display it so beautifully, is that ultimately the main character comes to a sense of completion of being who he is and being content, and not sticking with his regular, average, ordinary life, but doing it in a way that's still enjoyable, it's still interesting, it's still exciting in his own fashion. We're made to want to accomplish, but the restrictions that exist on Shabbat are only there to give us the opportunity to find that connection. But I think I'll have to defer to our Biegun for a little bit more about that.
I think what you're saying is very true, and I think that just two little pieces to add to that. One is that I think that the quiet time on Shabbos is really a treasure, and I think that everyone should try to carve a little bit of time on Shabbos for themselves, even if it's a half an hour or something, and the weather's nice, especially if you go out for a little bit of a walk or something, and just have some quiet time to yourself where you can think. You know, I think that it's hard to think these days because there's so many things competing for our thoughts.